Okay, it's the Panel Magazine Radio time, and we're here with our regular co-hosts, Freya and Shirley, who I'll talk to in just a sec. And we also have a very special person guest and a very special plant guest. So we're going to be, that's getting everyone intrigued, because we're delving into nature based on our latest issue of the magazine, which is about consciousness and awareness and sound and all that sort of stuff. So we'll be talking a little bit more about that. So you can check out all of the issues of Supernal by going to supernalmagazineaustralia.com.au, and you can listening to us through DRN1/life radio based in Perth. So it's DRN1.com.au/life, and you'll be able to catch up on podcasts for not only our Supernal stuff, but also 24 hours of really good relaxing meditation music and other shows as well. So we ask you to support them. All right, so let's do the bit of introduction, starting with Freya. Good afternoon, Freya. How are you?
Fabulous, Anthony. Good to be here.
Yeah, another exciting episode coming up.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite things. I know, I love all plant music. Happy days.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good. And Shirley, how are you going all the way down on the peninsula?
Well, I think I need some plant music. Thank you. A bit crazy today. A few things evolving. So, as it is for everybody.
It's all a bit crazy in this world.
I'll just take it all in and lap it up today.
Yeah, well, that's good. As per usual, but I'm sure you will jump in and ask
relevant
questions. So,
I've lovely. Been a Damenhoe fan for years.
Right. Well, I guess
I'd like to know more.
Guest. Yes. Mm. Yeah. Well, it's we have a story written by our guest who's joining us, in Alison Jarrod. Welcome, Alison.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here with you today, and with my lovely plant to accompany me.
Now, do we have a name for your beautiful orchid?
Yes, we call her Cassandra. We needed an elaborate name because she's very elaborate in her beauty and her music. So her name's Cassandra.
It's an excellent orchid name.
It is. And she's such a gorgeous colour.
And she's just in bloom at the moment. So she's very out there and going, yep, look at me.
And hear you. Yeah. So for listeners, you may or may not hear through the podcast, tinkling sounds, and that's Cassandra talking to us about what we're doing, and we expect once she's used to all of us, she will talk a lot more, so we'll get into that in a bit more. So we've done a story on plant consciousness in the latest issue of the magazine, which is the August-September issue, and it's all a part of vibrational healing and meditation and health and well-being. And when we were talking initially, Alison, I hadn't really heard of Damenhoe, so I'm rightly or wrongly, because assumption is not the right word, I suspect there are a lot of people that haven't really heard about Damenhoe here in Australia, and you are one of the heads of. So,
yeah, well, coordinator. It's a group thing, yeah.
So how many coordinators are there?
Well, I'm the Australian coordinator, but obviously there are coordinators for international communities around the world. So there is Damenhoe Central, as we call it, which is really the origin of Damenhoe, and that's in Italy, up near, not far from Turin, at the foothills of the beautiful big Italian Alps there at Mount Blanc, which is a very large feature on that range. It's just at the foothills there. So that's what we call Damenhoe Central, and that's really where Damenhoe began or was founded. And they, you know, quested in the growth of spiritual community for, you know, really for about 40 years before they then started moving into what was their international project. So it was, you know, sending those seeds of Damenhoe forth to see if other people were caught by this idea of growing community in this way that has an ecological basis as well as a spiritual basis. And so now there's 18 other international communities around the world. Closest to us are probably Japan. They have quite a big group. Their group's actually larger than ours. And the USA, other big groups are more in our time zone. Other than that, there are many groups scattered through Europe and indeed even into Africa, and there's a small community that is popping up now in Brazil. So, you know, all over the place.
Which is great. Shirley.
Sorry, I had to unmute myself. I'm a little bit out of whack today, and I just feel that beautiful being with her little notes, which I can't wait to see how and know how that'll work, is sending me some energy. I feel like beautiful. And I've just had to bring my little voice, who was sitting beside me, over and hold her, because I feel that there's, who the listeners is a small Lemurian skull, I feel there's a vibration, and I've had to pick her up and sit here with her, and I feel that Cassandra's, I have never been so mesmerised as I am by that being.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she's very beautiful, and certainly loving the spring energy. As I said, she's totally in, like, full flower in this last week. She's just really popped out. And
well, that's because she knew she was going to be coming on the radio.
She's Well, she's an orchid, correct? So, but what genre, species,
look,
genus? What genus?
I can't give you all of that information. I did probably once know it long ago, but I'm not like a plant specialist. So, other than that, she is a very beautiful orchid, and I've had her now for about 5 years now. And often, you know, it probably only got my music device probably about 3 years ago. But of all the plants that I try my device on, and particularly for when I go to do a talk somewhere, Cassandra is definitely she is not shy. Some plants are very shy and they don't like to be taken places and to sing to strangers. But Cassandra's got an out there personality, and
she's amazing.
She's really happy. I can take her to all kinds of places and it really doesn't faze her. You know, sometimes she'll have a momentary pause where she'll listen because something new has come in, but she'll soon start to interact. So
she is. And you know, as usual, we just spoke before we tuned in, and we asked about your dream spell, Kinnan, as resonant dragon. But as I, you know, that fits, and today's a dragon day. And as I'm looking at Cassandra, she's so dragon-like. Her, you know, she's a purple dragon, and the whole shape of her flower and the way she spread her, you can see those wings coming out to the side, how it's almost like a web. What do you call a dragon's wings? Are they webbed? What do you call it?
But it depends on what kind of dragon.
She's like, true, she is like almost like a frill neck dragon. She's opened herself. I'm like, I'm just so glad that I'm going to cry. I feel I'm really getting something from this planet. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's very, very giving. As I said, she loves to be able to project.
Shirley cries over the plant on radio.
Well, luckily.
I do love them, and I've been really looking at the orchids lately as I've been out and about, thinking, I need to get myself one. I need to get myself one. And I haven't had one for so many years, and my green thumb's gone a bit downhill, and maybe that was telling me I should get one and I didn't listen. So I will.
Maybe you could get one of the amazing plant music devices and an orchid.
Yes, which we'd like to hear more about.
Well, we will hear more about. And I'm thinking too, Shirley, I might, if you're after an orchid, I've got plenty of orchid.
I'm having that day, believe me.
Jane's going to repot some of our natives, and they are
stunning. I'd love some of those, please.
Yeah,
outside, because I've been renovating, and my garden is full of very healthy, beautiful weeds, which I appreciate because I'm a weed person. Like, you know, weeds are edible. No, I really am. I appreciate the weeds.
Yes, you know, this is Bill and Ben, isn't it? You know.
But I do plan to put some natives with this. So, yes, Anthony, I would love that. Thank you.
I shall talk to the
person. Better get Jane to come and fix it up then to us.
Yeah, she probably will. She wants to go over. But anyway.
That'd be great.
So, yes, I did tell you, Alison, that we just didn't know where this was going to head sometimes. We just roll.
I'm happy to roll with where we go.
So we sort of, I guess we could jump into the whole plant music thing. I would like for our listeners' sake to get a handle on really what is the ethos behind Dam and Her. I mean, the website, which we'll give out at the end of the show, has some stunning photography inside. So just explain, I guess, to our listeners the concept behind Dam and Her and what it's actually about.
Okay. Well, the concept behind Dam and Her, probably the first thing is to appreciate that Dam and Her is an incredibly complex organism now. So to simply define it is a really tricky thing. But probably the best way to begin is it arose from the inspiration of a man, Alberto Araudi, who is known within Dam and Her as Falco. In fact, you know, this is something very Dam and Herian, as we say, is that part of the Dam and Her ethos, you'd have to say at a first level, is absolutely the connection between all of the worlds. And in this way, I mean the natural worlds on the planet. They describe this in terms of mother worlds, if you would like to take that term. And so these mother worlds are like, the best way I can explain it is that the mother world of us as the humans, we are in a mother world that you probably almost define as breath. It's like a consciousness expression of the planet. And that as we breathe, we are actually also the same in our mother world as the animals, because they also have this ability as us. They breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide. And this is like creates a spin of energy. And in this spin of energy, we are all connected. And this is often why the animal world we find, you know, closest to the humans, because and often talked about as our messenger companions upon this earth, because indeed we're expressions of a similar form of consciousness for this planet. A second mother world is, of course, the plants, because then they take this cycle of breath and they have the opposite. So in essence, we've got a symbiotic balance, and that the and with this, obviously, they take our carbon dioxide, and then through their photosynthesis, they bring back the oxygen. But as we know with breath, breath is a mover of energy and a way that also we move consciousness as well. And so in this way, we're always exchanging consciousness with the plant world. So they're like a balancing mother world to the human and animal mother world. And then, of course, within consciousness, we always talk about trinities, because a trinity is really this balance of consciousness. So the third mother world that is kind of like sits and balances both of these other two mother worlds is that of the non-physical intelligence. So sometimes we would characterize this as nature spirits, but truly this is as broad an ecosystem as what is the plants and the human and animal mother worlds, you know, everything from the teeniest fairy life to the largest elemental energies are the intelligences that build this third mother world. So Dam and Her, in part of their in how they grow themselves, is very much about coming into alliance with these three forces, because one of the other aspects that characterize Dam and Her is this idea of diversity within unity. And very much they believe the pathway for our evolution is one of increasing unity. And that here on the planet, you know, increasing unity is a unity that embraces alliance, in fact, remembering, I'm sure we actually once had this amazing alliance, and indeed many individuals do, but as a collective, to move back towards this fuller alliance where we are back in consciousness interchange with the plant kingdom and the non-physical kingdoms, and that only in this complete integration can we really embody our next levels of evolution, because we're actually fully integrated and supported within the world that we live. So this very much underpins a lot of Dam and Her's work within the world. So hence why they style themselves as an eco-spiritual community, because very much they are conscious of the world around them and building relationship with that. But also not only that, it's also then, of course, into the other worlds, which take us more into the worlds of divinity and divine dimensions. And indeed, they also bring a very interesting work to that through what they call, a unity of divinities, that they work through this idea of triad. But mostly it's about evolution, you'd have to say, is the fundamental driving force of Damanhur. It's helping humanity in their expression to move towards this more complex collective consciousness unity, which, you know, I know many groups in the world work towards, and Damanhur just take their particular, you know, view to be able to help us all in this direction.
Yeah, which is, I find absolutely amazing, and something that we certainly really need in the world, especially today. You know, more than any other time with everything that's going on, I think if you can find community and work within community, and I really like the words, the adversity in community, you know, the ability to have a voice might not be the same voice as everybody else's, but that's what creates the community in the first place. I love that, yeah. That sort of theory.
Absolutely, because this really is the expression of complexity. And even, again, if you look at just systems around us, you look in agriculture, where we have moved to a more monoculture with less diversity, we can see that these type of agricultural systems are more liable to destruction and attack by insects and other things because they don't have as much diversity. And, you know, research clearly shows that when a system is more complex, so more types of plants, more types of structures where they can work in an integrated way, this has way more resilience and also capacity to meet change because, of course, it's easier for it to respond because there's more parts of it that can move. And I think this is an absolute mirror for us as a human collective that, concerning in some ways is our idea, our kind of monocultural themes that come in where we are, you know, we're losing languages upon the planet, you know, as Indigenous races and that die out. And, you know, there's a push to come into just more, you know, only a few languages. Even here in Australia, like there used to be, more than 1,000 different, you know, languages of First Nations people. But I believe, you know, we're down to now where there's only like 13 that are known. And so this is a huge loss of diversity. And it's this project is really to help push things back the other way, to increase individual diversity, but also collective and group diversity to because in the end, our collective consciousness needs to be rich and complex in order to be able to grow in a useful way.
Yeah, I think absolutely. There's that cultural diversity. I mean, I put it to, say, understanding a bit of farming. And if you watch shows like Landline, they talk about now diversity in their farming and their approach to farming and how it's benefiting the soil, it's benefiting the crops that are growing, which ultimately benefits the people. Because they're getting good food and all of that sort of stuff, the animals are being better and more well looked after. So I guess that's the diversity of not being stuck in the old ways of doing things and looking to new ways. And, of course, there's no such thing as new ways. They all would have been done in the past. It's just that we've been guided down this particular path and now they're making it through. I really enjoy that. Shirley?
Yeah, and as Alison was speaking, it reminded me very much of Damon's 2040 movie that he made a few years ago. Did you see it with me, Ants? I can't remember. I know we interviewed, did all the rest of it. But, you know, how the farmers, and I said before I had my weeds, you know, allowing nature to, because it knows what it's doing. It knows nature takes care of its soil, you know. What you said about becoming very mono and then, you know, everything that you said. It reminded me so much of that and how I loved when I was watching that movie, they call them alternative, but of course it's natural, the farmers that were encouraging the multi-growth and letting it all just go accordingly naturally to keep the soil flourishing and nourished, and the crops rotating, and the animals in with the weeds and the crops and everything just growing and growing and flourishing. And I had that very strongly come to mind as you were speaking. I think it's all linking up, and of course now it's so important that we really get a handle on it. You know, it's not whether you're into climate change, or they're into this, or you're into something else, or you're not. There are facts that speak for themselves, and that beautiful plant that is speaking to us, all the plants speak to us. If only we could, maybe we need machines through, what if we had these big machines through the fields and we could hear them all talking? Oh my God, maybe we'd all sit still for a moment and just truly listen.
Yes, and indeed, it's that very thought that pioneered that the Music of the Plants project, because it was to, you know, we suffer from this thing which, like plant blindness, you know, we go through our world not really noticing the plants. Not everyone, of course, you know, there are those that dearly love their plants, but for many of us, you know, we're quite blind to the plants that live with us in our world. And being able to help people have a closer interaction, because of course, as soon as you hear a plant start to sing in this way, to be able to produce music, we think about it differently. Suddenly we think, wow. And then we can see that it varies its reaction to us. And so it's not just blindly responding to the environment. It actually, you know, it's sentient. It has definite ways of interacting, which the more you work with them, the more you start to perceive. And part of this is being able to make this sentience, you know, audible, you know, more visible in our world, so that, yeah, we take that moment to go, wow, actually there's more going on here than normally I would imagine. And I think that, yes, and indeed one of my, you know, visions or is to actually at some point set up a garden or a parkland or somewhere where people can come as a public place that that plays music. So it's a sound as well as a scent, you know, a sensory garden, but that the sound aspect would be augmented by having different areas where plants can sing and you can go and sit and listen to the vibration of the plants.
Would the diversity of the plants, were the plants that we sort of look at, are plants that we consume, plants that we, you know, eat or use for different things, for building materials, ones that we consume for food, ones that we tend to say, aren't they beautiful and look at, would they put out a different frequency of sound?
Absolutely.
Depending on their, yeah.
It's very interesting. You know, I was going back to when the first time I ever come across Music of the Plants was actually way before I actually met Dem and her. It was from reading a book called The Secret Life of Plants, which is a fabulous story if you haven't come across it before, where it talks about Cleve Baxter and his experiments as a New Yorker in his room with a lie detector. And, you know, in his boredom of one day, he had a plant on his desk that he decided to connect up to see, you know, does it do anything? And, you know, the famous experiment of then he thought, I'm going to burn one of the leaves and see if it responds. And what was interesting is that, you know, he went out of the room to, because he didn't have cigarettes or anything, so he went to go his secretary to borrow the lighter off her. And by the time he come back, he looked at, down at the lie detector machine and, you know, the plant's doing this. And he's like, yeah, I haven't even done anything. And that's really when he got interested, because he's going, oh, my goodness, it could perceive my thoughts. It reacted as soon as I had this intention. And then he went on to do a lot of other experiments, which are detailed in the book, you know, with other people, and found that not only, you know, like for one of the women, he had to babysit her pot plant. And then he got this idea of asking her to keep a diary of any major things that happened during the day to note down the time of, you know, if she got a shock of something or stepping out onto the traffic or, you know, that kind of thing in her day during New York, so that he could map it against her responses, and found that there was an absolute correlation to major emotions and energy that she gave off, the plant would respond. And then this woman was on a business trip and she had to go to Singapore from New York. And again, he was babysitting the plant. So again, he asked her to do a similar thing. And what was so interesting is, again, there was you know, no delay, even though she was on the other side of the world, the lie detector would still respond whenever she had this kind of emotional charge, showing that it really is working in the quantum field. So in a field where it's not defined by distance or space, but is something energetic. And also what was interesting was that, you know, goes on to detail that as other people tried to replicate some of the experiments, you know, it didn't always work. And indeed, you know, plants don't always sing necessarily for everybody. This is another thing, because it comes down also to relationship, which is another interesting part of this. It's actually when we're in relationship is when there is more interaction. So, you know, Cassandra, as I said, you know, Cassandra, I have loved for many years now. And so she sings the best for me because she knows me. And when we're together, she's always happy to sing. And that, so again, there's this sense of relationship and your willingness to actually want to join with them. This is another thing. Sometimes when plants aren't singing and we're in a group, you know, I'll get the group to just come down and just do some breathing to come into a more heart coherent state. Because when we're in heart coherence, we have this natural connection to everything. And it's amazing how then, you know, the plants then start to interact. But just going back to your question, Shirley, about different voices, absolutely. And this story that I was going on to was actually, I was really excited about this idea. And I was talking to my son, who at the time was only like 8 years old, at a local Steiner school. And I was talking to his teacher about this book and, wow, there's these plants that sing. And there was a local man that a herbologist, and he had obtained a device that had come from Russia because, you know, this idea had been developed for many, many years. And so I approached him about whether we could borrow his music device and whether he would come to the children's garden at the school so they could listen to their vegetables that they were growing in their little veggie plot. And it was such a thrilling experience, certainly for my son, because I wasn't actually there when it happened. But, you know, he came home that day and he was going, oh, Mum, potatoes sing just the way you imagine. They're very plodding. And then he was going, but the beans, they were shy. They wouldn't sing to us at all initially. And, you know, not really, you know, until we got the carrots to sing. And once the carrots were singing, then we went back to the beans and then the beans sang better than everyone. But it was like they needed to hear everyone else sing first before they could sing, and that they just have such different voices. And since then, you know, I've experimented this myself. You know, I have a mint plant, which also is a quite good singer. And, it, you know, it sings just like mint, kind of, you would imagine, mint's very bright and lively. And certainly the mint sings like that. It has a very bright and lively little song that it tends to sing. And then you compare this to like a tree, you know, have a beautiful eucalyptus red gum Mary tree. And it's a tree that sits beside our pond, and, you know, always through summer we have morning coffee under it every day. So it's one that we interact with a lot. And indeed, it's become what we call our welcome tree. So we have a tree which we ritually use to connect to all of the trees and the nature spirits in our space as part of this demonherian growth of consciousness with plants. And it has an incredible song. I love hearing it sing. Because, you know, trees, obviously, they're much older. They have a depth of experience and complexity. And when it sings, like Cassandra's beautiful and she has lovely little tinkly tones. But when the tree sings, it's like an orchestra almost. It brings many tones at the one time and it can actually play interchanging melodies, which really, you know, in essence, show the complexity of its consciousness in how it plays.
What you're saying now, Alison's making me think of all the rings in the trees, something to do with that.
With their age.
And of course, depending on the age, it has more. I feel like there's something.
I think you're quite right. I think.
And if you think it's almost like the grooves in a record.
Yeah. Certainly it holds a greater age and a wisdom, you know. So, again, it's more vibrations of consciousness.
The tone, the frequency, and also many, many years ago, the dropper discs were discovered in caves in the Himalayas, with the Himalayan skulls and things, and I've actually seen the dropper discs. It looks like a big stone record, basically, and your grooves. It's very interesting. There's something.
Yes, well, you know, there are very, very wise trees. So this is well known through Indigenous cultures. You know, there were this concept of mother trees, which hold wisdom for a particular family of trees in an area. And indeed, science is now catching up with this idea where they can see that these trees, and particularly, you know, when they are near to death, how they actually send a lot of energy out into the trees around them, and they actually gift another tree with the sentience. So trees work very collectively, that they very much already work at a level of collective consciousness. And I really believe that this is part of the gift that they offer to humanity, is helping us on our pathway back to reclaiming our collective consciousness. In some ways, I get this sense they're waiting for us to catch up again so we can all, you know, continue on this path of evolution together. Because they need that, they need us as well. You know, we are the legged ones. We get to move around and collect up frequencies wherever we go. And then, you know, we come back and they are the standing people, you know, in the traditional way was known, because they are like big aerials and they anchor this information and this diversity wherever they are. And so we're always in this interchange.
Yeah, I find it interesting because we have I think we have a pretty good connection with our trees and plants on our place here, which started at our other house. But we have what we have lovingly called Big Mama Tree. And Big Mama Tree threw a branch to tell us she was in trouble. And it was a big branch. It was bigger than putting my arms around it. I couldn't quite get around it. But she threw it away from everything. So it landed on a driveway, not hitting any of the other plants we planted underneath, not hitting the trees down the other side. And when, you know, I looked at that and went, okay, so I've just seen it. I actually watched it happen. And I thought, right, you're giving me a message. And so I went up there and I'm talking to Big Mama Tree, because she's a weed here, but she's just so big and beautiful. It's a weed's only a plant that grows where you don't want it to, really. And so we looked at that and we talked about it and we connected with her, and we got an arborist in who went up and had a look, and he came down and he said, she's really in a whole lot of trouble and we're going to have to do something here, because the birds had eaten right inside the core and she was rotting from the inside out. And so it's really interesting, because we had a really hard decision to make. We haven't killed her yet per se. We've had the arborist in and trim back all the branches and what have you. And interestingly enough, we've sort of done the sculpture, because we didn't want to take her out. And everything's been cut sculpturally, and we're wondering if the birds are going to come back and all that sort of stuff. And amazingly, the birds are still now all coming back. They're nesting in the holes that they created in her, which has ultimately leading to her passing. But it was really interesting, because, you know, they gave us the warning. You know, we're talking about a tree that the branch that came off was probably 70 feet up in the air. So it's a, you know, a long way up and a very big branch. And she's about 130 odd feet up, based on using my drone to go up and measure the heights. And so I took that as a very stern warning. I think I spoke to Shirley about that when it sort of happened. I went, well, guess what? And, you know, I've got to warm my pine just outside the window here, and I realised it was thirsty, and I said to it, I've got to get you some water. Mm-hmm. And then it just blew over and dropped her branches into a water container. And I've stood her back up and now watering. So we talk to all our trees and our plants, and, you know, we generally know when there's an issue and we've got to fix it, you know, because they rely on us for a bit of stuff as well. Freya.
Hey, so I'd just like to reflect back on a couple of things Alison's shared. Being that I've had a plant music device myself for a long time, when I had a Delilah, who was palm tree, she was actually potted, so she was inside in the Earth Heart venue. She would be very much engaged in people's healing processes. So even when I was in consultation with people talking about development of a plan, whether it be for their diet or what kind of processes would be helpful for them to take their own self-realization / healing journey pathway, Delilah would very often get involved in the conversation. She'd be quiet or she'd be playing in the background, and then she would make some very definite sounds when she felt what I was saying was on the money for that person, which would often inspire people to be like, that plant just talked to me. It wasn't just singing in the background. It said, it agreed with you. Things like that. They can be very, very helpful for, you know, expanding people's hearts and consciousness in that way. Also, Delilah used to, in the mornings, for when I used to live in that space for a little while, she would start to sing in the morning in a way that I would be able to wake up in harmony with her. And it was the most extraordinary space and relationship to have go deep with the plants in that regard. One of the things that, you know, just reflecting on that, listening to everything everyone said, is it reminded me of a journey that I took to Glastonbury. And Alison, you've been to Glastonbury? Yeah. So did you meet Gog and Magog, the ancient oak trees there while you were there? Yeah. So when I went to Glastonbury for the first time, I had profound experiences between the Avebury Henge Circle and the Stonehenge Circle, some excellent past life memories and connections between the resonances with the stones. Also, what I found particularly in that area was the connection with the druidic trees. Now, first time I met Gog and Magog, that I felt so reminded of a time of my eternal life. And the second time that I went back to see them, Gog had died. He was on his way out, but someone had left a candle burning in him and walked away, and he caught on fire and died. And when I got there, I was overcome by grief. And there was all these barricades. You're not allowed to go and sit near her anymore. And this, of course, being myself, I completely ignored that. Leapt the fence, went and sat down with Magog and just wept and wept and said to her, I'm so sorry, you know, you've lost your beloved. You've been together over 1,000 years. You know, really had this deep connection with her. When I came out from that process, and went around back onto the laneway, Magog showed her face in the tree, which the people who I was with, who had led many, many tours to that location, had never seen. And so that was quite a profound experience with such an ancient wise tree. And what I wanted to ask from that reflection is, how does Damanhur, or does Damanhur have insights into, or anything you can share about their insights into humanity's relationship with trees, particularly trees that live for 1,000 or more years, where a human being only lives for, you know, 100, let's say, and the reincarnation process and that relationship?
Yes. You know, it's something they bring, they have an actual project which is called Humanitary. Mm. And a part of this is actually because one of the concerns is the loss of the many ancient trees upon the planet. And this is because just as we talk about the humans having like a, you know, a race mind or a collective consciousness, and indeed obviously we recognize animals have this, you know, of course plants also have this. And this overarching consciousness being, you know, the name they give to it is like the green brain. And that, again, this diversity and complexity of consciousness is essential for the planet's evolution, because it's part of how, you know, Gaia herself expresses herself and creates memory. And so absolutely these ancient trees are vital. You know, they're vital for humanity because just as you said, they hold many of memories that indeed we may have lost. And they are essential for bringing a balance to the conscious collective in how they, you know, try to work to assist the trees in this way. Is they do a project which they call orientation of the trees. And this is where they use an instrument, they use instruments which they call selfic instruments. These are kind of like intelligent geometries that hold a consciousness within them. And so what they do is, as much as possible, right across the world, and they've been doing this for many years now, is this device holds, it's just like a note, it's a frequency note. And they have this project which goes across the world to go and find these old trees. And you use this device and you walk around the tree three times in order to deliver the note that is in the selfic device. The tree then, if it chooses, because trees like us have free will, you're not like ensorcelling it or doing anything, you're simply delivering a sound to it in some way. And it is able to use this tunement sound to actually connect to other trees that have held the same sound. So it's just like you're creating a resonant field of connection. And in this way, helping to build, you know, an internet in some ways, an internet of consciousness between the big trees of the world. Because once, of course, they were surrounded by vast forests, and so their ability to connect with each other was much augmented. But with the diminishment of the forests and also the diminishment of the old trees, then their ability to hold a collective level of consciousness as a race mind for the whole planet has been weakened by the actions that we've taken to clear so much area. And so this project, which is orientation of the trees, happens all over the world. And indeed, you know, our group as a Damanhur group, you know, we go out to the forests to where big old trees are, constantly looking for them. And then we have devices here that we use, as do peoples all over the world. And, you know, at this stage, you know, they keep a map. Every time we find an old tree, we take its GPS coordinates so it can be logged on a big map, and also augmented through technology to assist them to communicate so that they can support each other, and importantly also supporting us, because this collective memory is really important.
Beautiful.
Do you find when you're talking about these beautiful old trees, is there a minimum age that you look for, or is it just you walk up and you get a sense of their energy in that scale?
It's a bit of both. Really, for a tree to hold a higher complexity of consciousness, you're probably wanting a tree that is at least 200 years old. Having said that, it's not just the age of the tree. It absolutely is their emanation. And sometimes there are younger trees that have this emanation because a mother tree has passed what it has to them. And so there can be younger trees that have a vibrational field. Certainly when I'm walking through the forest, you know, there's a tree not far from where I live that someone had told me about, but I didn't really know where it was, but I went looking for it. And in truth, I felt it before I saw it. I was walking through and suddenly I could feel this field, this meet me. And then I was like, wow, where are you? Because I can feel you. And then I went around another corner and then suddenly there was this tree and I was like, wow, it's you. I can feel you so strongly. So it's because sometimes, you know, there are old trees that also, you know, just like us, you know, there are older people that have great wisdom and have a great field of emanation, and there are older people that, you know, maybe not as much. And so it's not just the age of the tree. It's certainly a potency of consciousness, and it's a bit of a mixture of the both.
Do you find when you're having these journeys with finding these trees that some of them have definite sort of features on them that actually make them look like they have a face? Yes. I had an experience recently in I was making prayers to, you know, work with a retreat centre, and I wanted somewhere in Margaret River, and and that came into being. And when I sat there with that place, I spoke to the trees, you know, I sat under the trees, connected with them and prayed with them to be able to come and, you know, be of real service to them. As is happens, as you would be well aware, the weather, the way the trees start to move together, the sounds, you can hear them having this incredible conversation, even without the music device, and the animals will come and all of these things. After that, I went for a walk. I was guided to go for a walk, and this property goes down a valley and then up the other side, and it's got quite a big border. And right at the top, at the very back, was this tree, and I could, like you were saying, feel it. And eventually we came down the back and around the corner, and then I could, it was such a strong masculine presence. I turned around and there he was. I don't think he's 200 years old yet, but he's one of those ones that obviously a bit younger, but he has this incredibly gnarled burl growing on the side that looks very much like an Indigenous elder's face. I must give you the coordinates for that tree.
Yeah, like I've had this experience also many times. Also, I think it's because, like in the experience that you were describing there, you see, it wasn't just the tree. It was the elements were responding, the plants and the animals were responding. And this, to me, is when you're in that moment of alliance of Mother World. So you can feel a greater interaction of intelligence, which is all of these things, because absolutely, you know, as soon as I'm getting into connection, typically I'll feel that little sneaky breeze come around me. I'm going, oh, the nature spirits are greeting me and saying hello, because they're really happy that you're here working with the tree. And also it's kind of like the consciousness within the trees, and certainly this is a druid knowing, is that, you know, there are devas that are connected with all plants, and that this devic consciousness is very much related to each species. And as you come to the tree, part of it is, you know, I feel this energy, that very much is like a devic energy, which is kind of like almost the spirit of the tree, this non-physical consciousness aspect that, yes, comes forward. And like you, I've had many experiences of seeing, you know, a face, a personality. Is this something that's actually coming out to greet you? Because it can feel your, you know, the heartfelt wish you have to meet it and to work with it. And in finding relationship with, as I said, with it, really any of the natural worlds around us, it's just like finding relationship with one another. When there's a genuine heart connection, you know, this is our method for connecting with everything.
And I feel like that comes back to, we were talking earlier in the show about this Dhammaharian interconnectedness, an intrinsic natural relationship with its complexities of all parts of life. And it comes back to that heart consciousness. There's a definite something that occurs between living one's life from a self focus in a one-way street kind of relationship with nature and creation, mm-hmm. to moving out of that shadow of the solar plexus perception of the world and self to the heart consciousness. Then it's unavoidable to be, you just can't be devoid of consciousness of the relationship with all things. So it's not really about the plants that sing or the animal, that it's the whole thing communicating all at once. And as the first time person sees that, you can't unsee what you can then see.
It's a life-changing moment,
yeah,
in many ways, because you're suddenly in a appreciation that, my goodness, I live within an intelligent construct, and all of it wants to talk to me, if only I am open to seeing it and perceiving it and hearing it. and that when you make that shift, then suddenly you are launched into this world of great synchronicity where everything is, you know, there chatting and wanting to help and heal and assist you. Because yes, you know, truly we live in a complexity way beyond what we probably regularly appreciate.
Yeah, well, I think because there's so much out there in life.
I just wanted to say that when your cat came on, Freya, Cassandra stopped singing for a moment and went, "My goodness, what's that?" And then she came in with a different song, but I just wondered, she's obviously saying hello to the cat. Sorry, Anthony, keep going.
No, that's right. It's all those little things. It's about being attuned to everything in a way that allows you to walk through life experiencing what you get. So whether it's butterflies and bees and beetles and ants and scorpions or trees or flowers, it's just being in that space. And that's what I love is, you know, being able to, and I learned a long time ago to work with elementals and the Devic kingdom, and so spent a lot of time when I've had sick plants sitting there meditating and putting energy into them and talking to them and watching them just come back to life and doing what they need to do. And I just can't imagine a life where I didn't talk to them or I didn't interact with them. You know, it's a beautiful space to be in, I think.
It's fascinating, isn't it? You know, I've got two serpents, and one I've just introduced to Anthony before our first chat.
Now, we're going to have to tell Clippy off about that.
I know. Clippy, can you sit still, please? Thank you, boy. It's not me, it's the cat. And, you know, this is one of the most interesting things to me is that we have these, you know, these archetypal plants and animals who are extremely misjudged. People have become very misguided about the actual nature of the natural world, and where things become, you know, demonized. Poisonous plants become demonized because they have a poisonous quality. Poisonous animals become demonized because they have the capacity to threaten the life of a human being, and changing, you know, and changing that inside someone where they move from that position of fear, judgment, and rejection, and to, you know, to acceptance of that aspect of themselves, that aspect of nature, and the vitality of the inclusion of that life form in creation is really something quite powerful. Does Dam and her have a way that they communicate about that side of things?
Again, it's this appreciation of the importance of diversity within unity. So much as what you're saying, it's this idea that everything has an important part. You know, we're all a jigsaw piece of the whole, and that there is certainly within the philosophy, and as we, you know, grow through some of the levels of study that that I do with Dam and her, it's very much paramount in whether you're talking about other individuals or whether you're talking about other species, plants or animals, it's being able to appreciate, you know, all things have their own soul part in many ways. Everything is a soul which is part of the interconnecting web of all. And appreciating each part's need to actually express its uniqueness in its fullness is actually what allows the whole thing to flower. So yes, there is a relationship that is formed, and indeed, you know, one of the interesting ways they have of forming this is in naming. And that as you progress in the Dam and her school of meditation, as they call it, their initiatory philosophical school, you begin to take on other names. So the first name you take on is an animal name. which then helps you build a web of connection into the animal world. And of course, lots, again, a diversity of animal name. In fact, you know, my animal name, which I've now achieved, is Nephila. And Nephila is a spider. It's an Australian golden orb weaving spider, which makes this massive web. And and just even in my own journey of, you know, finding which was the animal that wanted to teach me and speak to me.
That so was always going to be the one for you.
For sure. And so this is one aspect that they bring, first of all, to bring relationship to all of the varieties of animals, the poisonous, the non-poisonous, the big, the small, all species, etc. You know, we all have to take a different animal. And then after then you've kind of what they call, you know, conquered that, you've worked with it for a number of years, you then move to the next one, which is then you take on a plant name. And then again, you build this web of connection. So just even through this this energetic naming, where we build a conscious collective web between us all, to just link by link, each of us are bringing in these connections, you know, and it moves on to where then they also connect to, you know, divinities and connect to crystals, and, you know, the names gradually build as you move along to represent the need to connect to the collective web of life.
It's interesting as you say that, it reminds me of a guy that we had that's come out here to help us with teaching my partner pruning and growing the food forest and all the stuff that we've been doing. And he encourages spiders and things to live in his house. And he's taught his kids not to be fearful even of the spiders that are poisonous. And as you were talking, I was just getting this sense of almost everything you're saying is like you've got to overcome the conditioning fear of to be able to move into that space. So your web has to be that connection without fear. Because as soon as you fear, as we know, more highly sensitive animals, plants are going to react to your energy, that unseen energy field that we walk around with. It's quite an interesting one to have to get your head around, isn't it?
It is. You know, again, this is the difference of fear consciousness and love consciousness. You know, we know that fear consciousness is a contraction and a separation, and that as we overcome this, we expand again towards love consciousness, which is a connection and a unifying element. You know, love is the glue, as they say.
Love is the glue. Well, I used to say, no, I won't say that. I'll just...
And the elastic band that draws us back together.
Yes, exactly. I'll add something nice there. It's just anyway. Sure.
Good idea.
Yeah. So, Alison, we are sort of running out of time for the show. However, I don't think we've adequately described what the plant music machine is. So maybe for our listeners, if you could describe what it is so that they actually understand how it works, please.
Right. I'll take it all apart first. That so what I'm using here is a device which is kind of like it's just like a MIDI synthesizer. You know, it's able to take electrical signals and change them into music. You could use this same type of technology, and indeed, Dem and her experimented with this on what it's reading is that you have one probe which connects to the root of the plant, and then you have another clip which clips to a leaf. And what it's measuring, if you want to, or reacting to, is the different electrical signals which move between the leaf and the root of the plant. Everything alive obviously has these electrical signals. What's interesting with the plants is that whenever you actually have it like a plant that's never sung before, typically you'll find it will just play scales. It'll just go boom, 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 and it'll just repeat it over and over again until it seems to discover that it is making the sound. And then it starts to play around with its own internal electrical signal to change when and how the notes play. And then it starts to develop its song in this way.
Sorry. So you're saying, Alison, that it's not that we're just not hearing them because we haven't got a device. It's actually perhaps that they haven't been singing, and then they become aware of their own voice, their own sound.
Yes. And it's like they understand they can manipulate the instrument. You know, I think this is really the key.
Hilarious though, isn't it? When a plant hears itself for the first time, and it's, you know, they sort of sometimes, some of them get a shock.
Yes.
Wow.
Until they work out what's going on. And this is also why having a plant that already has experienced it in the company of a new plant, the new plant will actually get the gist of it much quicker, because it's like they'll share this interaction between them, and they'll teach, the one will teach the other.
So it's hearing itself on some level, like hearing it like we do.
Absolutely.
Or is it tuning into it and thinking, my frequency is audible, or is it here?
It's going, I am audible. I am audible. I mean, that's to equate that into terms of the very last operation I had on my ears to get hearing back when I was a kid. I always thought I could sort of hear, but then I had this last operation, and then all of a sudden I could hear. And I remember sitting on my parents' bed crying my eyes out because I could hear everything. And as you're talking, it's just like the plant. It's like it's hearing itself for the first time in a way that is audible to us. And that's exciting for them.
Of course, I guess we sing to our plants, we talk to our plants, so they hear.
Mm. And because they feel when they speak or sing, they feel how we respond to that. It's because we get joyful and excited, and we want to encourage them and all of those things. Or if things don't sound necessarily pleasant to our ears, it'll pick up that, oh, that was interesting, darling, sound communication. You know, and I remember Delilah, you know, she had many, many fronds. She was a beautiful golden palm. And somehow one of her fronds got caught underneath a blanket that was on the couch. And one day I was in a bit of a hurry to get organized for something, and I grabbed this blanket to move it, and it pulled her frond, and she screamed through the PA system. She screamed, and my heart just sank. I just was like, I am so sorry, you know. I didn't tear it off or break it or do anything like that, but the shock that she got, because I didn't see it was... And did somebody pop the blanket on top of that? Yeah, there was a lot of apologising going on and some tears.
I have to therefore ask about plant consumption.
All right. Here's an interesting story, and Anthony actually had wanted me to tell this story. But it was about a vegetarian restaurant that thought it would be really cool to have music of the plants devices on the pot plants in the restaurant. And that on that first day when they started up, you know, beforehand the plants were singing, that everything was very ambient. But once they served the food, the plants stopped singing. And they're like, oh, my goodness, what does this mean? And the outcome of it was that they thought about it, and they thought about doing a prayer of gratitude to what they were going to consume, and as a prayer to the plant, this acknowledgement of this interchange and truly, you know, the sacrifice that is of a life to a life, and that changed it. They brought, and every time then they brought the prayer of gratitude, then of course the plants would then sing.
Which is what, you know, ancient tradition in the killing and the consumption of an animal, the tribal beings, you know, people, who were more conscious than us, would have done that same thing.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the honouring the sacrifice and utilising the animal and the whole being and everything. So, wow. And, of course, now we're moving into such a strong plant-based food. You know, everything is, they faux meat, is plants or plant-based. So we need to be honouring that just as much, don't we?
Yes, you know, it makes sense of, you know.
We are...
the ritual of, you know, this gratitude for what we eat, you know, that to have these regular prayers as part of our day that bring us more into connection and consciousness with, yeah, the actions that we're taking.
And when you're in
the wild.
We have to
be breatharians.
I don't think so. I actually think they're happy to be in interchange with us. It's more just that we're in a loving relationship. You know, I think they're very happy to heal us and feed us, to share their breath with us, to share their bodies with us. I don't think it's that at all. But I think it's more to do with, again, are we in connection and reception of the energy that they're gifting?
Acknowledgement.
Yeah.
And really, if we're going to take it in, that assists then... the nutrition, the good work that the plant will do in our cells for our body, for our healing, even if we're using it for medicine, for a poultice, or taking it in, or whatever we're doing, or wearing it, or whatever, it really can work if we acknowledge it and are aware of it and conscious of it, rather than just, as we know,
that
pouring it all
vibration.
In.
The love and gratitude being the energies that grease the wheels of creation.
Yep.
And, you know, it reminds me very quickly of another time when I was out in the bush in Adnyamatna country in South Australia, and that's very Spartan. They're the stone people. And there was these incredibly tiny little bushes that were so only maybe 5 inches, maybe 10 at the most off the ground, and they were covered in these fluorescent berries, pink and orange and yellow. Bright, bright. They were tiny, maybe the size of a fifth of a 5 cent piece. But I knew, because I was communicating with the plants, that those fruits were edible. And the plant was saying to me, please help yourself, but please leave enough such that we can procreate and that there's enough for the animals, which I did. And fortunately, and so please don't try this at home, kids. Fortunately, when I got to Igawada, the community, there was posters there that said that those fruits were bush foods and edible. So that's the key, is that when you actually go back into this relationship where you're communing with nature, then so people always go, well, how did the Aboriginal people know? How did the people know what was poisonous and what wasn't? Trial and error? Did they just do it and die? No, they didn't. They actually had a relationship with all parts of creation.
No, I prefer to think that they just did it and died, you know, like seriously.
Sorry to burst that bubble, people.
Yeah, yeah. No,
but I'm not sorry, hashtag.
All right, so moving towards the end of the show, Shirley has drawn a card, and you better tell us from what
I did. I just happened to have, literally didn't even realise, the Tree Angel Oracle deck sitting next to me on the table because I used it the other day. And so I've drawn a card, and it's card number 8, and it is Aspen. And when I look, the being is in the top. I'll show us.
Oh, yes, we'll do the gag joke again, yeah.
Okay. Yep. So there's a being in the top of the tree there, if you can see. Aspen. So the message from the beautiful tree, Aspen, to us humans around this planet. Aspen is a spiritual warrior. Its medicine makes our enemies tremble. Of course we tremble too, but just like the aspen, not out of fear, but from uncontrollable laughter. This joker brings us to our knees, and conflict crumbles as the perpetrators start to collapse with mirth, and everyone ends up laughing together. Who can resist the astute wit and disarming charm of a stand-up comedian? Humor can make us as invincible as a master of Tai Chi. We refuse to take sides, become unpredictable, and simply go with the flow. This great flexibility derives from a feeling of immense spiritual freedom, because the aspen rubs shoulders with the god of the wind even more than the white and the black poplar do. The heavens are vast and are filled with laughter. There is little need to point out that our razor-sharp wit conceals equally great powers of discernment and creativity. But then so what? Am I bothered? You could say that given so much Buddhist non-attachment, we are probably close to enlightenment, although the idea that one person could be more enlightened than another is so ridiculous we won't pursue it any further. But without the aspen, things are very different. We become stiff, inflexible, and ill-tempered, clinging tightly to routines and social tropes that are best left buried. I can't stand people like that. Who, me? Stubborn and impatient? Don't say another word or I'll scream. Very interesting message from Aspen, and appropriate to our time of what's going on. And the Oracle of Aspen says, lighter than the breeze, the breath of life is suspended over the waters of life. Nothing could be more funny. The universe follows eternal laws, and you watch all this and shake with laughter. Because really, going back to the dream spell, as our gal has said, it's all a cosmic joke.
which leads me to think, I know we're getting close to wrapping up, but Alison, I just need to know, have you ever connected a music machine to a plant and it said, leave me alone?
Oh, my goodness, Anthony.
Good question, really.
There are some that, you know, on some days they simply won't sing. Mm-hmm. You know, and you could, you know, I've had plants which have sung for me before, and I go, yes, look, this one sings beautifully. And then I go and connect it up, and it's like, not today. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and, you know, I guess so. I guess like us, they have their days when they you know, are feeling that connection, and days when they're not.
There you go.
Absolutely.
I had to say it. I could not.
That's a very valid point. And I was talking to someone before on the phone, and he said, my estranged person, and he said, I was asking Google so many questions, I couldn't believe it, you know, the Google clock and setup that you have. He said, I asked her a question, and she said, no, in a very pointed tone. She didn't want to answer him and didn't have an answer. He said he couldn't believe it.
Wow.
Google said, no.
Living with Google.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, we shouldn't mention brand names like that.
Oh, well, you know, it's that setup that you talked. No, we're all right. We're not community funded.
Exactly.
We're free now, Anthony. We're free. We can talk to the trees, as Clint Eastwood said. Mm-hmm. He said they don't listen to him, but I think they do.
No. And I would love to be back in Middle Earth and communing with an ant. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah. In the meantime, we sit back here. In my world, Alison, of mediumship and teaching and that sort of thing, I bring people into their meditative space inside themselves to their tree, and they sit with their back to their tree. I get them to hug themselves and hug their trees so that they do love themselves. And so it's really interesting on how that, putting that into the context of what we're talking about now, is just so important, because the tree's energy spreads out around us, and with what you were saying about mother trees and old souls inhabiting young things, you know, we see that with people. Why wouldn't it happen with trees and other plants and beings?
Yeah, exactly. I had a strong message, you know, when I was in Demenher itself, they have an area called Sacred Forest, which is very beautiful, conscious trees. And in sitting with, there's a main tree there, their mother tree, which is called Diamantel. And in my experience with her, you know, what came into me as a sentience was like, we connect through every breath. Our leaves are like the lungs of the world, and your lungs are like trees. And it was just like, and then not long after that, I saw a Facebook post which, you know, showed the picture of the tree and then showed the picture of our lungs, and went, hello, you know, we have the same designs within us. And just last week I saw one of like someone's fingerprint and the circles of the tree, and going, you know, we have these characteristics which are very similar. We're a lot closer than we think.
Yeah. And look, some trees are really dense. I'll leave it at that. I got to finish on a note sometimes. I can only get in trouble. What's the worst thing I can do? impossibly. Anyway, is there anything you wanted to add, Shirley? Because you're muted, of course.
Yes, I'm here now. I would like to read out Alison's Tin Resonant Dragon. Red Resonant Dragon 241, number 241. I channel in order to nurture, inspiring being. I seal the input of birth with the resonant tone of attunement. I'm guided by the power of space, and I am a galactic activation portal. Enter me.
So she is. I remember. I remember in one of Alison's Pulse of Peace events, which is done on, you know, every month.
Every few weeks, yeah.
Every couple of weeks, yeah, so which is fabulous. And I remember that in one of those channelings, you were talking about being the golden orb spider. That was long before Dam and her came to birth. I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense.
Does. All right, folks.
And where do we get a machine? Where do we get the
okay, so certainly through Demo. I think Anthony's going to share with you the website. We have a connection to it on our website here in Australia, but also other Demo and Her sites throughout the world.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention demoandherAustralia.org because then that way people can connect in with you, and from there they can go out to find out where we need to be. So I think people can find out about machines via that website. We've also, in the latest issue, we've got on your story, we've got the link to your website, but also a video there about music and plants that can help people get a bit of a visual on what it is. And there's lots of information available on the website and through there. So get into the latest issue of Supernal Magazine Australia at supernalmagazineaustralia.com.au, and you can read all about it over 4 pages about Dam and Her and plant consciousness and music. We're coming to you through drn1.com.au/life, and we're looking forward to entertaining you more. And I think at some point we might have to get you back, Alison, because I don't think we touched on any of those really funny stories that you told me on the phone, and I think I'd like to get to there. But I think the one about, you know, going into a vegetarian bar and having some vegetarian food and the plants going, ugh, you know, it was always funny. But a really good lesson to honour what we take in as humans. I think if we could do that more, we're going to be a much better planet overall.
And we have to acknowledge the beautiful Cassandra for being here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Beautiful galactic being of
absolutely stunning. So
thank you, Cassandra. Thank you, Alison.
Thank you, Alison. Thank you, Freya. Thank you, Shirley. Right. So everyone, have a supernal week. Take care, and we'll talk soon. Ciao.
Thank you.